Agenda item number 14, which for the audience's information here is the last agenda item for the day. We had already taken up the request for a public hearing on Bluefish Commercial Quota. Didn't think anybody was going to care about that. So, brings us to tonight's feature presentation on the 2017 recreational cobia size and season limits. Mr. Jorley, you have a PowerPoint presentation, I understand. You have a PowerPoint for us?
Oh, I thought I was just going to wing it, maybe.
He's getting funny.
Seriously, he's getting cocky.
Well, I started to talk ahead of my last presentation, so I'll try to do better this time. I guess before I get into the PowerPoint itself, we had FMAC meeting last night. So originally there was an FMAC meeting February 27th. But the committee did not have a quorum and so could not pass any motion. So there was hope that there would be another FMAC meeting that would allow the committee to make a motion to the commission, which they did last night. And then the second reason for doing another one was a lot of stakeholders were hoping to see something from staff in terms of potential season options, projected harvest, similar to what happened last year. At the May public hearing. So just to be able to see some of the options before coming here for the public hearing. So last night's FMAC meeting, we did have a quorum present with the committee, and also staff, main thing staff did was present options, various seasons and season lengths and vessel limits, and we'll present those today. But I just wanted to give a summary of the of the FMAC proceedings and what the public had to say. So one thing that the chair of FMAC did was go through a list of potential changes to the 2017 cobia regulations and just did by show of hands who would support what. So we had 43 members of the public in attendance last night. And so there were, I believe, 10 individuals who provided public comments specifically, but this was a way to gauge the will of all those people that were present because it was a fairly sizable turnout. So the first item that was on the potential regulations list was just the option to keep what we had done in 2016, which was 40-inch minimum size, one per person, two per vessel, closure of August 30th. Only one of those two fish could be bigger than 50 inches, and then a prohibition on gaffing. And not one person wanted to keep the 2016 regulations, and so that was an easy item. No one voted for one or two fish vessel limit. One person voted for three fish, and then the rest voted for four fish. Well, all 40 voted for a four fish vessel limit. 36 people voted for a May 15th start date, and one voted for a June 1st start date. 26 people voted for a September 15th closure and three for a September 30th closure. And then 37 people said they would like to see gaffing allowed from a pier at the very least, and all but one person wanted to also keep gaffing from a vessel legal as well. So basically, the general will of the public was to lift the gaffing prohibition entirely except for a couple people. So other general sentiments. Obviously, the gaffing issue is a main point among a lot of the charter captains who showed up last night, just safety reasons and more just a sentiment that it wasn't necessary, that the people out there fishing knew not to gaff smaller fish. They could tell, and if it was close to being undersized, they would net it. And then another concern that was brought up was that while there wasn't any large loss of revenue from the 2016 regulations, they found it difficult explaining to their customers things like the vessel limit, gaffing prohibition, and just the general changes that had occurred in the fishery. Everyone seemed to be okay with just allowing one fish over 50 inches. This was definitely a measure that was meant to protect the spawning females, and I think everyone, staff included, is in favor of doing something like that. You know, obviously, this is a harvest-oriented fishery, but people do want to see, you know, protection of those largest fish possible. That was about it for FMAC. There was some concern over the vessel limit as written out in reg is a daily vessel limit. So if when we set the vessel limit at 2, that means each vessel could only keep 2 fish per day. And some of our captains were sort of upset because there's a lot of money to be made if you take a 4-hour trip in the morning and then go out and take an afternoon trip. And unfortunately, that was not something staff, it was not really on staff's radar up until the meeting last night. So there's no way to get in touch with law enforcement and have a more formal review process of whether or not it would even be possible or logistically feasible to come here and switch to a per-trip vessel limit. So that was something that may be on the horizon for future discussions, but it did become a point of conversation last night. So, to sum all of that up, the opinion of the public who was present at FMAC was that September is good fishing. There should be a season into September. Early season closure, yeah, it might provide some conservation benefit, but is it enough to justify blocking off that time where people could be getting weekend trips in or charter captains could start booking some trips? So the general will was that because of this bad data, it doesn't make sense to make small cuts on the season like that. And then obviously most people had wanted that upper end of the vessel limit, which was 4 fish. So the committee itself, FMAC, made a motion for a season that would run May 15th through September 15th, 40-inch minimum size limit, total length, 1 fish per person daily possession limit, and a 4 fish daily vessel limit, whichever is more restrictive, and that the captain and the mate do not count toward the vessel limit on 4 higher trips. So, for example, if the 4 fish vessel limit went through and a captain and a mate took out 2 people on a charter trip, that vessel would only be allowed to harvest 2 fish. So it doesn't matter that including the captain and the mate, there are 4 people. The vessel limit is only related to the number of customers on board. So that motion passed 4-1-2. There were 2 abstentions and 1 dissenting vote, just more from a conservation of the stock standpoint. And then staff also received 9 written public comments. So this is outside FMAC, either mailed in or emailed in comments. 3 were from either fishing organizations or just a collection of anglers and interested stakeholders, while 6 were just from personal people. There were some charter captains included then, and there were also some private anglers included. Most of them wanted to see gaffing reinstated. A few did express concern for the stock, but the overwhelming sentiment from those comments was that bad data should not be dictating how we manage a fishery, especially if that means putting on restrictions. And the majority of the comments also either said no late start and no closure, or a closure in mid to late September. So once again, echoing that sentiment of as few closed days as possible. But there were a few comments where people said, I believe the stock is undergoing overfishing. There are a lot more people out there. And some people said, stick with what we've got. Some people just said in general, we need to reduce the take. So that's a not so brief summary of the various public comments we received. The blue paper that was passed out are public comments that were received after the evaluations were sent out. And so my summary just now did include some of them. If there are any questions on that at any point, I'll gladly field them. But if not, I can get into the presentation. which
questions from the commission?
Just a comment on the fin fish. First of all, you did really well with that going on last night. That motion made by it was Tom, and I asked him, what was your intent of the motion? It was exactly what you said, and he specifically left out the gaffing issue.
Oh, yes.
And he specifically left out the 1/50 inches, and he said his intention was to leave those 2 things as they were. So that was that.
Any other questions?
Okay.
I think we're good.
Yeah, I'll move into the more formal presentation. Just I'll start off with some of the landings and biological stuff that's been going on or might be going on. Do a short segment on what I'll call the management climate, where we're at now, where we might be in a couple of years. And then I will get to those projections and seasonal options that I referred to earlier, the things that we went over in FMAC. We'll go over them again today as much as the commission would like to. So starting off first, obviously this is the most obvious reason of why we're here. I used this slide last month during the request for public hearing, but I figure it is good to bring up again because these are the estimated landings from NOAA's MRIP surveys that have led to a lot of the strife that's been going on. You can see 2015 and 2016, Virginia has had over 850,000 pounds of estimated landings. North Carolina in 2015, as we remember, also had a very high landings estimate. And both of those states, so North Carolina and Virginia, took cuts, didn't follow that June 20th closure, but both states enacted regulations that compared to what had been going on before 2015 were pretty conservative. The only difference is that North Carolina did see a reduction in estimated landings and Virginia did not. So if you look at 2016, North Carolina's estimated landings went down to 285,000 pounds, whereas Virginia's actually went up a little bit. And so for whatever reason, North Carolina does get more samples in their MRIP survey, so they do have more samples to work from. And just it's possible that the nature of their regulations just happened to shake out in the estimates to be lower. They had closed off some days for anglers, just couldn't go on certain days of the week. So this is a refresher of what Virginia had before 2016 and what we have put in place for 2016. As you can see, the 40-inch minimum size, total length minimum size, one per person, which Virginia's had for a long time, two per boat, but only one of those could be over 50 inches in the event that there was more than one angler on board, closure of August 30th, and a prohibition on gaffing. So these were the measures that we thought would provide some real conservation benefit. Obviously, from the data standpoint, it didn't appear to do that, but this has been something that staff has felt obligated to keep, at least on the commission's radar as we go through these deliberations, which is the most recent stock assessment indicated a declining trend in biomass. And so, obviously with the high MRIP estimates, people might be saying, well, why should we be worried if we haven't really been catching this much? But the stock assessment was based off of MRIP and MRFs, the precursor to MRIP. This stock assessment was based on earlier years of data where the harvest estimates appear to be more in line with what we would think is happening. So there's a good chance that this declining trend really was happening over the years. And so I've added in a little piece of text here to show that this upper dotted line is the threshold where the stock would become overfished. So overfishing is when you catch too many in a year. The annual rate of harvest is too high, whereas overfished means that the absolute number of fish out there, the absolute biomass of fish out there is at a low point. And both legally and biologically, that's a tougher hill to climb than coming back from overfishing. And so that's where a lot of the concern has come from. But that stock assessment was only using data through 2011, and here we are in 2017. So the question is should we still be concerned about cobia? The stock assessment indicated a declining trend. One thing that most people in this room can agree on, whether it's a commission, staff, public, is that the fishery has grown in number of participants. There are more people fishing for cobia in the bay than there were 10 or 15 years ago. And there's also a belief that anglers have become more effective at targeting cobia. Not only legitimate big cobia towers, but just the ability to travel around the bay and go from spot to spot and do sight fishing, maybe not using that tower but using other methods. So those are all beliefs that might lead us to say, well, we probably should have some concern. But also what we've heard from anglers and from some of our staff that works out in the field is that there are a lot of small cobia out there. And so that would imply that maybe there was a good year class recently, and that in a couple of years, using these current regulations, which are already fairly restrictive, that there would be a class of spawning cobia that may be reproducing and contributing to the stock in the future. And that's also entirely possible. But unfortunately, Virginia and really most places on the Atlantic coast do not have independent sampling for cobia. So there's not much data coming in that's not coming from fishermen. And obviously, landings data could change for any number of reasons, whether it's a change in the number of fishermen, the change in the number of trips they're taking, or the change in the abundance. You know, that would be the actual sign of trouble. So those are pretty tough factors to balance without the numbers. But one thing that the staff feels is our obligation to at least put on the commission's radar is this idea of the illusion of plenty. Not trying to say that this is happening right now. Staff is not trying to say that the reports are wrong or that, you know, we know something that people don't. But the point of this is to show that cobia is a candidate species for this effect that people know as the illusion of plenty. So cobia is an aggregating species. When it comes into the bay, it comes into groups and spawns. Cobia are batch spawners, so they spawn throughout the summer. But the key factor here is that they form groups. And obviously, not all habitat is going to be the same to a fish. There are spots that every fish would be on if it could. You know, if every person could live in New York City and try to make it in acting or Broadway, they could, but there's not enough space, it's too expensive. So there are factors that cause people and fish alike to go to places that are less desirable. And so these dots here, these brown dots represent places where cobia are or might be. This is a hypothetical situation. And then the boats represent places where people fish. You have Windmill Point, you have the Bay, Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel, places like that. So the understanding is that if you're a good cobia fisherman, the best spot for fishing is probably going to be the best spot for cobia in terms of suitable habitat. So the fear is that as people start fishing and cobia start disappearing, they're going to disappear from the less suitable spots first. So as people catch them from the bridge tunnel, if those cobia aren't there to come back next year, fish from other places may move into those spots. And so what happens is this abundance starts to decline. Anglers aren't necessarily seeing a change out on the water because you can still catch these fish. You still know the best places to find them, and they're not going to disappear from there first. And so the problem or the fear is that it's not going to be immediately clear that there's a decline in abundance because people are catching them as they always have. But as you get to a situation where the fish abundance has declined a lot, that's when you start seeing the fish disappear from those really popular fishing spots. And so, as I said before, we're not trying to say that this is currently happening with cobia. We're just saying that given the species' life history, you know, coming into specific spots to spawn, and the fact that we don't have any independent surveys to tell us what the true abundance is, that this is a candidate species for this effect. And that effect, the illusion of plenty, just to reiterate, is you have declining abundance, but that's not showing up in the angler success rates because they know the best places where the cobia are always going to be until they're not there anymore. So just something that staff feels is necessary to put on the record and at least to put in people's minds as well, another factor considering what's already a complicated situation. So getting back into the management, these are the accountability measures that National Marine Fisheries Service works with. The goal is always to reduce the chance of going over that ACL, that annual catch limit. And so when the 2016 overage happened and they had information, you know, they saw that Virginia and North Carolina didn't comply with the June 20th closure. So NOAA's thought process, well, there's obviously a chance that those two states will do that again and that those two states alone can catch more than the ACL. So the best thing we can do is close federal waters effective immediately. That's the only thing we can do to reduce harvest. And so that was the National Marine Fisheries Service's move. There has been an indication that depending on the measures that North Carolina and Virginia pass, that they might be willing to reopen federal waters and consider that move. There has been a lot of frustration that's come out of Georgia and South Carolina simply because a January 23rd closure means that they don't have a season, period. It's not an issue of should they comply or not. It's an issue of all of their fish are in federal waters. So there's pressure. You know, there's no guarantee that it goes anywhere, but that's something that NIPS has said, I'll say half-heartedly or, you know, not as a promise, but it's something that they would consider. So I guess this is just another table that shows why South Carolina and Georgia are upset. This is a table of percent of harvest or landings that come from state waters. South Carolina and Georgia have mostly zeros, which means 0% come from state waters. Georgia's harvest is usually pretty small in total numbers as well, but they are predominantly a federal waters fishery. So I think that taking all this together is it's clear that the South Atlantic Council and the National Marine Fisheries Service just don't have the process or potential regulations that could really address the issue that we've seen now the last 2 years. And that is why the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission is being brought on. The management plan is currently under development. The goal is to have it ready for 2018 so that COBIA would be sort of adopted. And a lot of the concern from the public and in a sense from staff's part is how is this going to look? Because a lot of states in Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission become state-by-state allocations, and that each state has to stay under a certain number. So people are worried that the 620,000 pounds for the recreational sector of cobia from Georgia through New York is very, very small. And so that's obviously a real concern. The other possibility, though, is that it goes less about explicit state-by-state quotas and more about they could do rolling season openings so that each state has a different season length. And that would be based on the landings, but it would be a bit removed from that direct, here's your number. And so if you stay within your bounds, then you're good to go. The specific management style that would be in place is complementary management, which means that the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission can make decisions by itself as long as it is following the annual catch limit that's set out by the South Atlantic Fisheries Management Council. So that's obviously something to keep in mind is that Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission will not be the top of the ladder here. It will still be the annual catch limit coming from South Atlantic. So whenever a stock assessment happens that produces new management advice, the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council will propose an annual catch limit that NOAA would then review and pass through. So obviously, there's no easy way to handle this issue. There are a lot of factors that have led to this problem, but the one thing that ASMFC can do is instill accountability. And obviously, it may seem like a tough pill to swallow because Virginia is the one currently on the hot seat, but you know, for example, it could be another state in the future. So New Jersey had a banner year for cobia last year. Obviously, in terms of number of fish caught, that's nothing compared to the Chesapeake Bay. But the fact is, if those fish move north, as a lot of fish stocks have done over the past 10 or 20 years, and suddenly New Jersey's regulations, which is 37 inches and two per person, no vessel limit, no season, if we start saying, hey, you guys shouldn't be catching so much, and they say, okay, well, who's going to do anything about it? That's where the ASMFC would be able to step in and say, here's the plan. We need everybody to comply with these minimum regulations. And so, obviously, the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, just due to the timing of the crisis we're in right now, it may seem like it's going to be bad for Virginia, but there are many different ways where the ASMFC can serve a state in coastwide fisheries issues. So I referenced the adoption of the fishery management plan under ASMFC. That's most likely 2018. And then the other big things that are going on right now are the stock assessments. There's also a stock identification workshop that was originally scheduled for this year. It has been moved to just become part of that 2018 stock assessment. That's where they will review all the genetic information that's being collected now and any studies up to this point, and they'll say, do we have that delineation point right? Obviously, there will be some public comments about the stock boundary being moved from the Florida Keys to the Florida-Georgia line. And so that is where that's going to be hashed out. So they will be doing that during that stock assessment. The weird thing about this new stock assessment is that a research track stock assessment means no management advice will come out of it. So they may have the recommendation that the stock boundary should be changed, but it probably would not happen at that exact point because no other things like biomass or fishing mortality are being estimated. This is more of a fact-finding assessment. They're building the model. They're finding the data sources. And then in 2020, when they do the quote-unquote operational stock assessment, is when they run the model, they produce the outputs of where they think the cobia population is. They would calculate the annual catch limit based on what the model says. And judging by this 2018 stock identification process, they would either run the model with Florida or just those states, or there may be a third or fourth option that we don't even know. But that's just to give an idea that we are going to be without an assessment for another few years. So there's no guarantee that we won't be in the situation in the future, depending on what these MRIP estimates give us and of course, give the other states. So that's it for the management section. Now I'll move into the projections and the seasonal options and the pieces of information that will actually be the decision points. So just to review what staff had done last year, there were projection methods that we had more or less borrowed from the National Marine Fisheries Service just so that we could be consistent with what they were doing. That was using the previous 3 years, wave by wave, which just means 2-month periods. A wave is January, February, March, April, things like that. So split the estimated harvest up by those 2-month waves and applied those 2016 regulations to the MRIP raw data from 2013 to 2015 and said, if we had had this 40-inch size limit or if we had had this 2-fish vessel limit in place all along, how many of those intercepted MRIP fish would not have been caught? And so that sort of hypothetical reduction is how we got the projected harvest. Obviously, it didn't end up being a good predictor of what 2016 harvest estimates would come out to be. Staff had put that number around 330,000 pounds, and MRIP gave us a number almost three times that large. And so, obviously, the main factor that ruined that was just that whatever that high projection number was, that 2016 estimated harvest was only comparable to the 2015 harvest. 2013, 2014 were smaller numbers. And so our projection based on those 3 years was a pretty small number, but that 2016 number was just way higher. So obviously it didn't work out, but this is the best thing that staff can do to defend or create some sort of justification behind potential season options that the commission may want to investigate. So for 2017 projections, we just moved the 3-year period up to include 2016. But given those estimates that we consider to be on the higher end of the realm of possibility, we did a minor adjustment to the harvest. So using the standard error of the mean, which is just a basic statistical technique that acknowledges that our estimates may not be right, we adjusted those numbers downward. And so we distributed that reduction throughout the May, June, the July, August, and the September, October periods, which are the periods where we have estimated cobia harvest. And so you can see sort of the before and after. So these are the 2014 and 2016 averages before our adjustment, and these are the numbers after. So you do see a considerable reduction in harvest, especially May, June, and July, August. This table right here shows some of the projections that we did. There are more, and I have them at the end of the presentation, but the goal here is to just show kind of the spread of what these projected harvest estimates are falling out to look like, and I didn't want to paralyze the commission with so many options that you have a hard time figuring out what's even different. So these are arranged in order of decreasing projected harvest, which means they're in order of increasing amounts of regulation. So at the top here, we have a June 1st through August 31st season with a 2-fish vessel limit. That gives us about 365,000 pounds of projected harvest, and then it goes down from there. And you can see August 15th as a potential closure date, and the vessel limit goes down. So obviously that's about as restrictive as you can get, June 15th through August 15th with only one fish per vessel. Don't know that that one's going to get much attention, but we included it just to show the low end of if we really wanted to be restrictive, this is what we would be doing. If you'll notice, I say three or four here. This goes back to a minor point that I believe I made at one of last year's COBIA meetings, which was when you look at the raw MRIP data, you can see which intercepted fish came from a trip and which came from some other trip. And when we looked at that data, there just weren't any, or there weren't very many trips that had more than three or four fish being caught or harvested on the same trip. And in 2013, 14, and 15, obviously that was a possibility when we didn't have the vessel in it. But unfortunately, that data was not there. So when we run the projections and say which fish would not have been caught, obviously it wouldn't have changed because all those trips were one or two fish being harvested in the raw data. So these are sort of some notes on these potential regulations. As you heard, there was really no interest in changing the minimum size limit from our FMAC or from our public comments. So 40 inches seems to be a pretty good spot. Nobody wants to go bigger and risk putting that disproportionate pressure on the spawning females when you could have a lower size limit that distributes it more on males and females. The vessel limit, as I said, it's really tricky because the data just didn't show that we had those trips. We know that our charter captains could go out and get four or five fish for all of their passengers in years past. We know that there were some private boats that took out a bunch of people and were able to catch a bunch of cobia, but bad luck of the draw, we just didn't see that in the intercepts. So the vessel limit is really a discussion of MRIP savings versus actual savings. The sort of the two-front battle that the commission and staff and everyone is faced with is trying to produce regulations that will show that we're having a harvest reduction, trying to make it so that the MRIP numbers will respond, and then the other half of that is providing measures that we know will actually lead to a reduction regardless of what the MRIP estimates say. So we know that a two-fish vessel limit saved fish. We had a public comment where a charter captain said, I harvested 60% fewer fish with these regulations. So we know deep down that these regulations were doing something. And so those are kind of the two different viewpoints that we have to keep in mind when looking at potential regulations for 2017. And then the last point is just a comment on the seasonal dates. As you could see from these numbers right here, there's a lot more harvest being estimated in July, August than May, June. And so if you wanted to take out a certain number of days and get the most bang for your buck, that would be that July or August period. The cobia are here. People are, families are taking vacation. And so obviously the dilemma here is what's good for saving the fishery is also what's good for hurting access to anglers. And so that's obviously a trade-off that needs to be considered. So those are a lot of the things that need to be, juggled. But without further ado, we'll present the staff recommendation, and if the commission wants, I can show the other projections if these season, if these regulations don't quite capture what you had in mind. So staff recommends the commission approve the proposed 2017 recreational cobia regulations, which include a 40-inch total length minimum size, one fish per person possession limit, a two fish per vessel per day limit. Only one over 50 inches is allowed, 50 inches total length, a season start date of June 1st, and a season closure date of August 31st. So that's all I have in terms of presentation material that I was going to show right off the bat. And thank you for listening. I'll take any questions the commission might have.
I suspect there's a few questions from the commission.
Maybe later.
I stand corrected. Nice job, Brian.
Thank you.
Let's take public comment, and then we'll take it from there.
Is there interested in seeing the other options, or we can wait until...
Let's wait. All right, ground rules. Let's try not to be redundant. let's try really hard to be civil. We're all in the same boat with the same problems that we're trying to resolve. So let's keep that in mind. So raise your hand. I'll call you up. Come and say what's on your mind here. And I'm sorry, Captain Bob, but Mr. French's hand went up first.
He didn't hear you.
The tenor of our comments may be a little different. So my name's Jonathan French, again, here from Falls Church, Virginia. I'm the average Saturday angler. I actually only got to fish for cobia 2 days last year in Virginia waters. So I'm in this, you know, you'll hear conservation, you'll hear economic benefit. I'm here specifically because of good governance. Fisheries management doesn't work if there's not evidence that every step has been taken to align with federal and state directives and the rules that are created that are agreed upon by our legislatures. There are two focus words I want to emphasize on. One, maximum sustainable yield. Two, best science available and fair and equitable. And those are things that have really been missing in terms of federal management, and it's impacted you all, and I don't envy being in your position today and making these tough decisions. I had an opportunity to meet with the staff of the House Natural Resources Committee, chaired by Rob Bishop in Washington, D.C. on March 9th, and if you turn on C-SPAN, when the MSA reauthorization or H.R. 200 from Congressman Don Young gets considered by the House Natural Resources Committee, you'll hear about what's happening here in Virginia substantially, especially when Rob Whitman is questioning the witnesses during the discussion. The committee has taken this on as a case study with what's wrong with federal oversight management. Specifically, I have three key issues I'd like to talk with you all today. There was discussion around the 620,000-pound ACL, and this is redundant. I'm hopeful that my executive brief made it into the public comments. But in the determination to split the management zones with East Florida no longer being part of the Atlantic zone and that 620,000 pounds being manufactured, that decision was made based on a scientific paper from Tanya Darden and Matthew Denson from the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources. That paper was not peer-reviewed and ignored peer-reviewed academic research by...
Mr. French,
yes.
I hate to interrupt here. How about a new ground rule? Sorry to change the rules at the last minute here. How about addressing the issues that we actually face today, right now, with the decision that we have to make?
Mm-hmm. So I'm getting to the justification for why I want to make the recommendation. I'll shorten that. There are at least five peer-reviewed research that says that that line shouldn't exist because cobia are genetically homogenous. If that is the case, the actual ACL should be 1.5 million pounds, even with the crazy MRAP numbers. Crazy MRAP numbers for Virginia. If you total what Florida, East Florida caught with the rest of the South Atlantic zone, including Virginia, that catch was 1,594,000 pounds last year. The ACL with the two zones combined would be 1.5 million. That means you've got to eliminate 94,000 pounds of fish. That would have easily been done with a federal reduction from two fish to one fish on their daily limit. And that actually was approved in Amendment 4 that went to the secretary's desk, and the secretary, essentially something from our civics days in school, did a pocket veto, didn't sign it, and that's when the federal closure was announced because there was no active regulation to reduce the catch in federal waters. So a lot of this could have been averted. Now, why that 1.5 million is so significant, the Center for Independent Experts, which is the contractor that oversees the South Atlantic Council, they're paid by National Marine Fisheries Service. They write reports saying whether or not this evidence is useful for management. And we had multiple reports from CIE, from those staffers who have no reason, they don't have a dog in the hunt. They're paid to make their recommendation. They said that the CDAR 28 assessment was not sufficient for management. It was ignored. That was put into place. There was a zone split. There's no way we could have gotten under 620,000 pounds, especially given the effort numbers, and that's what I'm going to talk about next with MRAP.
Mr. French,
yes.
What would you have us do?
My recommendation is to match North Carolina's regulations because there's no possible way – any of these circumstances ultimately get you to an area where 620,000 pounds is feasible up and down the coast. Specifically with MREP, here is why. A week-by-week scrub of the MREP data showed that 479,000 pounds of those 900 and some thousand pounds that were caught in Virginia were caught in 1 week, July 8th through the 14th. Just to give you some context, that's 27,000 fish, 27,614 fish caught in 1 week. You know, draw your own conclusions, but that was over half the catch in Virginia and 37% of the fish caught from from Georgia all the way to New York were supposedly caught in 1 week. That's the blip. That's what has messed everything up. When you look at the other weeks in Virginia, the most fish caught, let me make sure I've got my numbers correct. I don't want to mislead you. Week 33, 104,000 pounds of fish. So one quarter was the next highest week's catch. 3,164 fish. So in 1 week, 9,992 fish caught. I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong point here. 14,000 plus fish caught. The next highest week is 3,000 fish caught. The next highest week is 2,600 fish caught. The average, taking out week 28, is that 818 fish were caught in a week, 26,000 pounds of harvest.
Mr. French, let me ask a follow-up question.
Yes.
You want us to adopt regulations that align with North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Why?
Because this information is not legitimate. With the mandatory reporting, a full season with equal apples-to-apples management strategy will give you a much more accurate picture of the total catch. It will give you a much more accurate picture of the actual angler pressure. And then you can actually go to South Atlantic and say, here is an alternative data source, because right now there is no alternative to MREP. That's why it constitutes best science available, even though we can sit here and poke holes in it all day. Any kind of restriction on the season ultimately jams up effort. It will create a higher effort rate and also cuts off available information with data. If those of you who attended the Atlantic States meeting back in February, there was discussion around red drum management and the closure on big fish, while I support that, made it impossible for them to use the last stock assessment for management because there were not accurate data sources that were manipulated by these closures. It's also, I support that because, frankly, it empowers and lights a fire under South Atlantic to take more proactive steps to correct this issue. I noted last year the lack of Virginia representation. And it's critically important that South Atlantic take up this issue. They've acknowledged the challenges, especially off the record, in this data collection. We can poke holes in it all day. And when you look at the economic impact within Virginia, MREP's data is $149 per directed trip. That's approximately, looking at the number of directed trips that MREP claims, that's a $14 million impact. That's hitting a very small niche community. I think you'll hear the other captains say today that the $149 per directed trip might actually be a low number, especially not factoring steel workers building towers, tackle shops selling bait, hotels, restaurants for people traveling like me who come to the area. This is devastating for a small, important niche community.
Okay, then let's hear from the captains.
Okay. My recommendation, again, four fish. One per person, no peer gap or allow gaffing, and if that's not considered, at least make an exemption for peer anglers. And happy to provide any additional information or any feedback on the executive brief that I provided.
Thank you, sir. Captain Reed.
Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate the opportunity, Commissioner, and the Associated Commissioners. And I'm here basically, my president of the VSSA, Virginia Saltwater Sport Fishing Association, had a business meeting today and could not make it, so I am representing VSSA, and I'm going to just summarize the recommendation. I'm not going to go into a esoterical presentation that some others may have presented. I'll just tell you what I know as a charter boat captain in the Reedville area. VSSA's position of Virginia Saltwater Sport Fishing Association requests the following regulations. And our mission, if you don't know, is to include representing the interests of Virginia recreational saltwater anglers, assuring the long-term sustainability of the fisheries in Virginia, and protecting Virginia's marine boat tackle industry jobs. Virginia supports one cobia per person, up to two per vessel, 40 inches total length or better. We also support one of the two fish being over 50 inches. VSSA does not support any closed season for 2017. Let anglers have a full season if these reduced limits are put in place. The MRIP numbers are highly suspect by everybody, excuse me, and we should not rely on such low numbers of cobia intercepts to reduce our season. Now, I'll mention that later. Okay, Virginia supports no gaffing restrictions. Let our anglers choose whether to gaff or net. The vast majority of anglers are honest anglers and would not intentionally harm a fish not intended to be kept. Don't punish all anglers because of a few that don't follow the law. VSSA and its anglers are conservative-minded and willing to do our part to protect the species. This is our living. Going any lower than the above is mentioned is simply not needed. Our anglers are reporting good numbers of cobia, and they are struggling to understand proposed legislation. We strongly endorse angler reporting to allow Virginia to obtain realistic numbers. We are 1,000% in favor of this new reporting system and hope everybody understands that. MRIF data conclusions based on 27 recreational fish caught to project over 900,000 pounds of fish, or approximately 30,000 fish being caught, is extremely unrealistic. And there was a lot of talk by the staff earlier about everything that seemed to be based on the MRIF data. We all know it's bogus. It's just, why? I mean, I don't even know why we spend so much time on it. But I guess we have to. That's it. The data is extremely flawed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Captain. Please come forward.
How you doing this afternoon?
Good.
I'm Captain Lee from up in Maryland, and I'm probably one of the only over six boats that comes down here to fish for the cobia every year. And, you know, we carry up to 38 passengers. Of course, in Virginia waters, we carry 6 to probably 10 on average. And I'm here on behalf of the 4 or 5 of us that do still come down from Maryland every year. In 2015, we did 38 trips total down in this water. And our anglers would not come back in 2016, other than I did 12 trips, and that was it. So, I mean, total loss is $49,000. And all of our anglers, every year that came down here, they all go to the hotels. They all usually stay 2 days. They all go to the bars. They all spend money. A lot of them do their vacations here every year during cobia season. We come every year from August to the end of September, usually. So last year, just off the bat, we lost, you know, 18 or 19 trips. So,
what would you have us do?
I'd propose for the 4-fish limit with one over 50 inches. And the gaffing, you know, we have a 50-foot boat. So I can do it either way. I can gaff them or net them. I'm a professional angler. It's all I do for a living. It's no big deal. But if we're around a bridge and we're trying to net a fish, it's twice as long to get that fish to the boat. you put a 50-foot boat around a bridge with a lot of other boats, or, you know, just the pilings, it's unsafe condition. But that can be done either way. But we propose the four fish is what we're proposing.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next. Please come forward.
Good afternoon. My name is Jerry Hughes. I'm a member of the Great Bridge Fishermen's Association in Chesapeake. I'm their member at large. I'm also a member of other organizations in the area, but some of them are right back here, and I'm sure they're going to come up here. The Great Bridge Fishermen's Association, we support one cobia per person, up to four per vessel, 40 inches length or better, one over 50. We also do not support any closed season in 2017. And we also do not support a no gaffing. On a personal note, I'm 72 years old. I have an opportunity to go fishing when the weather allows me. I have an 18-foot Sea Pro. I have to go. A lot of times I go by myself. I get in my boat at Little Creek. I go out to the 12-mile marker. I put my anchor out. I put my chum out. I hope to catch one fish. With the tide going like it is down there all the time, you know how hard it is to get a big cobia up to the side of your boat by yourself with a big net trying to get him in there? I need to be able to gaff that fish. That's my personal recommendation, is allow me to go out there and catch a fish over 50 inches using a gaff. I think it would be very hard for me not to be able to do that. Thank you.
Afternoon. Captain Chris O'Brien, Hydrologic Sport Fishing out of Norfolk, Virginia. I've been fishing the bay for a decade now, in my fourth year as a charter captain. I have over 500 hours on the water every year. So with that said, after I give my comments, I would love to have questions from you all, from somebody who's spends a lot of time on the water. First off, like myself and everybody else out here, the other charter captains that are in the audience, we're all conservationists. So if we thought that this fishery was in jeopardy of being overfished, I would be the first one to raise my hand and say shut it down, like striped bass back in the 80s with the moratorium. It's not the case. I participate in the tagging program, DNA samples, did it last year, doing it this year. We've recruited a lot more anglers that are going to be working on that effort this year, as well as the mandatory reporting. So we have the right processes in place, and I think we should just let them work before we make any rash decisions that are not informed or with good data or best science. This issue, obviously, it is a tough situation, and I'm not going to be redundant, but we all know why we're here. It's because of one reason. I don't even think we should be having this meeting right now. We should be fishing. That said, I support four fish per boat. Size limit is fine, 40 inches, one greater than 50. On a four fish limit, I do support that the captain and the mate do not count towards that limit. So if I'm carrying a charter with two guys, we're only harvesting two fish. And as far as the season goes, this is a tough one because cobia are migratory. So, but due to the inherent nature of their path, we already have a season. What we restrict down to even smaller, we're just cutting into profits. So that's like saying, hey, I'm going to take $10,000 off of your salary, I mean, how can we say, yeah, I'm cool with that?
I'm going to take it off of her salary. These guys get paid so much money to be here every month. We back up wheelbarrows into their driveway and just unload cash.
So I understand the importance of establishing a season for the message that it puts out, to the rest of the fishing community in the state and on the federal level. However, you're already looking at a 90-day season. We don't fish every day out of the summer because there's windy days, there's cloudy days, inclement weather, what have you. So August 31st, shut-off date, you're already giving us only 90 days, but there's good fishing days in September to September 15th. Those 2 weeks, that could be the difference of another $10,000 on an income that we're relying on, out of essentially a 4-month season or less. So my recommendation for the season, a June 1st start date is fine, but an end date of September 15th. Any questions for me? As far as gaffing goes, that irritates me because I feel like that's a distractor in this whole situation. I'm a professional just like all the other captains here. We use it as a tool. It's not like, oh, I'm going my gaff. I'm going to stick that little 30-inch Cobia. No, you're going to net them. But if you have a 70-pounder on and it's violent and it's, you know, she's fighting hard, the gaff is the most effective way to land that fish. It's the safest way to land that fish. And if you know how to use it, you're going to get that fish in the boat safely and more efficiently without, causing damage to yourself, your gear, your customers. And we're not gaffing a fish to release it. That's not – if you gaff a fish, you're harvesting that fish. We know that. Again, that should go without saying. So I feel like it's been a distractor in this whole thing. It would be nice to be able to use our tools as professionals. So I support gaffing.
Okay. Thank you, Captain. Appreciate you coming all this way to give your 2 cents. Appreciate it. Mr. Bob, we haven't heard from you. We're overdue. Welcome. It's good to see you.
My name is Wes Blow. I'm a recreational fisherman. I live in Newport News. My wishes would be for one fish per person limit with a two fish vessel limit, and only one of those fish being allowed to be over 50 inches. Reason for that is a larger fish is going to spawn more. So we need to protect the larger fish so that they can spawn more. Charter boats, a charter captain last night at the meeting, I asked him a question specifically if the two fish boat limit stopped him from booking any charters last year. And although they don't like a two fish boat limit, it didn't stop them from earning a living. So I don't think a two fish boat limit will hurt the industry. I think it will save us fish in the long run. Gassing the fish has become a big issue, mainly because I brought it up last year. But the reason I brought that up is because of what happens oftentimes when a fish is gaffed. It can fall off. If that fish falls off, if his guts have been almost ripped out and it falls off, that's a dead fish. If they're gaffing a fish and saving them, there's a potential that, oh, I've caught a bigger fish. I'm going to discard that. If you accidentally miss a fish with a net, it's going to live. It's not going to die. As far as a safety issue, in the FMAC meeting in month before last, I asked one of the captains there about his fishing experience that year. He had about 300 fish that they caught that year. His son and his mate, which is a 13-year-old boy that weighs less, around 100 pounds, he had no problem netting the majority of that fish that year. I don't know if some other mate made it some other times, but a 13-year-old boy netted over roughly 300 fish in the year and had no safety issues with it. I just don't buy netting a fish as a safety issue. As far as being able to do it, I've done a lot of cobia fishing solo myself. I have personally netted an 82-pound cobia by myself. So these professional mates and charter captains should be able to safely net one. Practically all of my friends net fish. We can bring them on board. We can photograph them. We can tag them if we're going to be releasing them for a tag. And we can choose whether to kill them or not. Once you put a gaff in a fish, it's done. And with the restrictions that we have now, most likely, of a lesser boat limit, we need to have that option to be able to release them alive. The seasons, the only way to cut back a little bit on our harvest is the seasons. I believe that we should have a June 1 start date, and that will save a lot of the spawning fish that come into the bay early. The cobia do spawn all year round, but believed by some that there's more fish that have eggs with them when they first come into the bay. So eliminating that May month could save a lot of fish and allow them to spawn. You know, the staff recommended the end of August for an end date. I would be good with that, but if you wanted to cut back more and you needed to cut back a large amount, cutting a few days off the end of August would be the time to do it, because that's the largest number of fish are caught in July and August. Just a couple other things that I'd like to note. Ryan spoke about the illusion of plenty. I was given a study on that, about the illusion of plenty, and what happened with that, and others could explain it much better, that in California they did a study on some fish, and what Ryan was talking about, you know, that fish was the most popular fish to fish for in that state. And over a period of times, you know, because they didn't realize what was going on, they wiped it out. Genetic studies that have been done for cobia on this coast show that South Carolina and Virginia bayfish might have a specific genetic track in them. Well, the spawning area for Chesapeake Bay, that's what it is. It's a spawning area. And that has a very specific genetic trait in them, as did South Carolina, but they overfished it there. It's wiped out. Fishery has collapsed. At one time in the Chesapeake Bay, we had big spade fish. We had chopper blues. We had gray trout. We had big spot, croaker. All of these fish amounted to thousands and thousands of cetaceans. You know, big fish. People would come here to catch those fish. We haven't had a handful of those fish to be cetaceans because they got wiped out. The bay is a world-class fishery for cobia right now. You know, there are people that travel for miles and miles away. I asked several charter captains several weeks ago, you know, where's your customers coming from? Where are they coming? There's been customers that I've told have come as far as from Texas to come here to catch fish. They don't come here to catch little fish. They come here to catch big ones.
Well, they're from Texas.
Yeah, right. Right. So my request is for the season and the restriction that I mentioned, but I would like for y'all to if you're going to make an error on making a decision on what to do, do it on the side of caution. You know, we need this fishery for years and years to come, and I would rather give up a little bit now and have it later in the future. We have ASFMC coming, so we need to prepare for that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. You had your hand up. Please come forward, sir.
Hi, I'm Austin Hain. I run Finero Sport Fishing Charters in Norfolk. I'm pretty much the same as Chris O'Brien. We fish throughout the summer. My sole income is cobia fishing. So much. I mean, it's literally that's what I do. All of my profits, I fish from about May 15th. I'll start booking charters till usually the end of September is it's strictly cobia. That's where we make our money from. So anything you guys do with touching them, it's going to crush me. I mean, with our fall striper fishing, you know how that is. We really have to capitalize on cobia. And basically last year we had the closing date August 30th. I mean, we are still catch and release cobia till probably the end of September. And I was just helping buddies out, so I wasn't making any profit on that because people don't necessarily like to catch and release cobia. So, you know, if what I'm getting at is basically I agree with if we possibly could have the May 15th to September 15th season, just, I mean, that's when I'm getting like 15 days. I mean, Zach was talking yesterday, just those 15 days, we have wind days in August, cloudy days, all that where we reschedule. So even though it's a 90-day season, that's not it's not 90 days of fishing. There's total weather problems. And as for the fish, I've only been doing this. This is going to be my fourth year. I see it getting better. I don't know if I'm getting better at fishing or what the deal is, but there's plenty of fish in the bay. There's big fish, there's little fish, and depending on where you go, like he was speaking on locations, you know, where there's obviously prime places in the bay. But I don't see the issue of lack of fish in certain areas necessarily. He was saying there's hot spots, but I mean, I can't tell you how many times I'm just leaving the marina and I get a mile out of my marina, we already got our two fish. There's plenty of cobia out there, and they're definitely not in decline, and nor the big ones. But I do agree with the 50-inch one per day. That was fine with me. I've actually always been like that with releasing big fish. We all care about the cobia.
You want to put your two cents in on gaffing?
I personally think gaffing's the way to go. I think it's an issue of, I mean, it's dangerous. When you net a cobia in the boat, which I've had, I'm not going to say what I said last time, guys. I netted a cobia, and the cobia gets in the net, especially if it has a bucktail. That's the issue. So the bucktail gets tangled up in the net, and the fish is thrashing. Bucktail is now in the net. Fish is going wild in the net. You're this close trying to get this cobia out. And I had that bucktail go right in the foot. And to the point where I've actually, if they're big enough, if they get around 50 pounds, it's bad enough where I'm like, guys, you guys mind stepping to the bow? And we'll have the guy like on the side of the boat so I can net the fish and bring them into the transom instead of actually bringing them in to where my customers are, because they thrash. As opposed to a gaff, you get them on the gaff, there's no mesh or anything for the bucktail to get caught off on, and you can just put them right in the box or do whatever you need to do with them. So that's okay. How I feel about it.
But
if we're going to get caught up on that, I wouldn't. I mean, that's the least of the concern. So just everything else, I pretty much agree with Chris O'Brien, what he was saying.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please come forward.
My name is Zachary Hoffman. I own and operate Salt Treated Fishing. I'm a little bit better at cobia fishing than I am public speaking, but I'd like to go back to some points on what Wes brought up. I know last night he kind of caught me on the spot when he asked me. He said, with the two fish limit last year, was I still able to book charters? And I answered abruptly. I said, yes, I was still able to book charters. But I'd like to emphasize to you, I have six people coming, spending a, you know, travels expense, a good amount of money, and to come to the dock with two fish and have to divvy it up to six people makes it very, very touchy situation, especially when it's like a walk-on style trip and I have, you know, two guys from here, two guys from there, and we have to sit there and explain to them why they only get this much meat, yada, yada, yada. So I'm all opposed for the four fish max per limit or per boat. And the 50-inch thing, I'm all supportive about that. I'm a huge conservationist, just like Chris O'Brien said. We make our living on this fishery. So I'm 26 years old, kids my age normally have student debt. I have boat debt. So I plan on this fishery being around for years to come. That's how I'm going to make my living. So the conservationist, I don't think there's anybody in the room that's more conservationists than us. Now I'd like to get back to the gaffing situation. Wes says that, you know, he does the netting thing. He's talking about George with the 13-year-old kid on the boat that they net. We're all adults here. We all have to obey rules. We know the rules and regulations. The gaffing thing, the netting is just plain dangerous. I've had times on my boat where actually last year, my mate John, he also runs another one of my boats, he was out. I had somebody fill in. We netted a fish that, just like Austin was saying, thrashing around. He had a hook in his hand. We had to get back, cut the hook, had to go to the emergency room. So, and I also like to say, you know, it's the gaffing thing, it makes it hard with people that don't know what they're doing. Our business is all novice fishermen. So when you got somebody that don't know how to handle a net properly, it's not as easy as Wes makes it out to be. So hence why his biggest fish was somebody got off the boat and got on his boat to gaff it. If it was that easy, then why didn't he just net it? So I'd like to see four fish limit, 40 inches, 50 inch, only one over 50 inches in the August date. I don't want to see that. just like Austin said and I said last night, that's like our buffer dates. There's so many times throughout the season that we don't get to fish due to weather. And this fishery is just our entire living. So those extra 15 dates that we could get in September could possibly make up for how much we lose during the season. So I just ask y'all just to try to work with us and do what you can.
I had a question. Yep. Mr. Zeter.
If you were given the option of having two per boat limit versus a season, say, from June 1st to September the 15th, mm-hmm. as opposed to two per four, which would you take? Would you rather have a longer season and take two per boat or take four per boat and have a shorter season?
I'd rather have two per boat and a longer season.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you for your time.
Anybody else have an issue here that we haven't heard from? Or an issue we haven't already heard about?
We got a dog coming up.
Welcome.
All right. You've heard from all the boat captains and all the boat fishermen.
Please state your name for the record.
My name's Josh Nicholson. I'm a pier fisherman. There's not a lack of cobia in the water. I fished a pier last year, one specific pier. We pulled in over 270 fish off of one pier. If the numbers are declining, we wouldn't pull those type of numbers in. Days were 30 to 40 fish on the pier. I do agree, May 15th to September 15th season, four per boat, over 50, 40-inch minimum. We do need the gaffing, especially on the fishing pier. You have tourists out there. They don't know a lick about fishing out there. So they're at the end. We're trying to tell them to scoop back from the thing. We're trying to net this fish for 10 or 15 minutes. He might still be green when he comes to the pier, very lively. If we stick a gaff in him real quick, pull him up, he's fine. If we get him in the net and he's like that, he comes up on the pier flailing, and he's just thrashing everywhere. These tourists are trying to get up close, trying to touch him, trying to see him. They end up getting hurt. Saw a little girl last year get knocked off her feet due to the fish being over 50 inches. I think it was actually about 57 inches. Flailing around, knocked her off her feet. So I feel that we do need to have gaffing. The May 15th season, migratory patterns. I mean, they're spawning. My University of Miami just got a big grant. So they're actually spawning their own fish. They have farms off of Panama that are spawning fish. So to say that there's a lack of fish, I mean, that's just absurd. The fish started showing up earlier last season. We saw fish in April. I mean, I don't see a lack in the fish. It's all on the water temps. Water temps getting warmer sooner. Fish are showing up sooner. So I feel May 15th to September 15th, four per boat, one per person. And that's all I have. Any questions?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I'm Bill Gorm with Boat Uplures out of Southern Shores, North Carolina. I've gone to many meetings at the South Atlantic and Atlantic states on behalf of the people that you just heard from today. I'll get to the recommendations, but wanted to update you on our efforts and why our season recommendation is what it is. Next month we have an AP meeting down in Charleston where I'm going to try to justify an emergency action for the Secretary of Commerce to step in and hopefully get some poundage back based on what we've uncovered with the stock assessment. Part of that, like last year with the state going not complimenting the federal closure, it opened a lot of eyes. It gave us a voice to get action and movement at the federal level. It's going to take that again to get this emergency action passed through. And that would be the only saving grace for these charter captains now or in the future. So reducing now for a better tomorrow within the Atlantic states under this ACL, under MRIP, just isn't there. I push for North Carolina to do the mandatory reporting because I believe in it. I'm going to put my money where my mouth is and get it out as best that I can. The vital important thing is for the next, this year until the next stock assessment, is for Virginia to get as much data as possible, to be data rich. But part of doing that, because cobia is a fishery dependent species, is that we don't restrain, and limit the data collection that we have. As far as season lengths goes from a lure manufacturing standpoint, tackle shops stop buying lures about 2 weeks before the end of the season. So I hope you keep that in mind when you're thinking of a season length. I think as far as fair and equitable for the state of Virginia, which I'm born, raised, educated, and probably one day will be back here. I started this entire fight because I was insulted that Virginia was going to be cut out of a robust and healthy fishery. It is to align and stay united with the state of North Carolina in a 4-per-boat limit. If there was to be a only 1 over 50 inches, I would suggest only 2 over 50 inches. That also, there's some things with MRIP that it helps not having only 2 fish per vessel. It's also important from a consumer standpoint because I actually sell a lot of lures to people who book charters. I've booked charters. It really becomes, they get one day to fish a year. You know, they take their vacation, they spend $700, $800, sometimes $1,200 down in North Carolina to catch a cobia. I think Virginia should support, you know, their investment into Virginia and let them have a Virginia cobia or a cobia that is in Virginia waters. As far as the piers go, and the fishery in general, you don't have to have a boat to catch this fish. It's many. Buck Road Pier is a huge cobia hotspot. Got the opportunity to meet a lot of people from Buck Road Pier. It's high income, low income. It's everything. So everybody loses. It's not just charter captains and even tackle shops for myself. As far as the gaffing goes, I'm going to let you all figure that one out. I do think a net should be required. You know, if you're going to have a fish, a low limit, you need a net with a slot limit. And obviously to report your catch. As far as the season length goes, a June 1st to September 14th. I think it's more than fair and equitable to have a season length that distance. As Rob will tell you, or Ryan, very knowledgeable in the whole experience. I do thank you all for what you voted last year in keeping the season open. And I hope you stay united and continue. Rob has done a fantastic job at the South Atlantic. And it's reinforced the importance of Virginia having representation there, even if it's just one person going forward. Any questions? Love to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Farr.
Thank you.
Mr. Dean, do you want to speak? Yeah.
You're Mr. Dean.
If you don't want to, you don't have to. You came a long way, so I figure you probably had something to say.
No, I think last night handled it pretty well. I think okay. People represented themselves.
Okay. Captain? How are you doing?
Doing good. My name is Mike Wills. I'm a recreational angler from Virginia Beach, and I just wanted to come up and say I appreciate the staff's effort to look like really minimize the impact from a year, which I believe, you know, has a lot of bogus data in it. And so I'm pretty much in agreement with the regulations, you know, for this year, with the exception of a closed season. I don't really feel that's necessary. I think, you know, the catch is pretty reasonable with 2, you know, per boat limit. And the size restrictions. So, again, appreciate the opportunity and all the work y'all are doing on this issue to make sure we protect our fishery here in Virginia. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Is there anybody else who has something to add that we haven't, hopefully, that we haven't heard yet? No, we've already heard it?
Never heard it.
All right. Good. Something new.
My name is Captain Chris DeMasi. I'm a charter captain, Class A guide, oysterman, and I work at Boater's Warehouse. Mm. I'm here today to talk about a tackle shop. Last year, I'm going to give you some numbers that you haven't heard. In May, our sales went down 11%. June, 16%. And this is all cobia-related stuff, you know, whether it's bucktails, lures, hooks, gaffs, rods, reels. July, 18%. August, 29%. September, 32%. And there was a good red drum stock last year. People were still buying bucktails for that. So basically, the average was 21% loss for us. For the and even with a 50% markup, that's still 10%. So imagine at the end of the year you're doing you're looking at your yearly salary and 10% of that's gone. You know, it's just people have been asking me personally since January what's going on with cobia. No one wants to buy anything because they don't know what's going on. You know, eels. Eels are $2 to $4 a piece. That alone right there. So another problem we're seeing is sales are going up in other fisheries. I'm not telling you all which fisheries those are, but they are.
We can figure it out.
Yeah. You know, and what's going to end up happening is a snowball effect. Those fisheries are going to be overfished again, and then the next we'll lose another fishery. You know, why are we putting the strictest regulations? You know, even though all our regulations last year didn't do anything, our numbers went up. You know, we support 2014-2015 regs because obviously the numbers – I apologize for being late. Well, I was caught in traffic, so I don't know the exact MREP numbers for this year, but I heard they're really, really high, which is higher than – 2015, which triggered all of this. So anything we did last year didn't have effect, apparently. You know, finally, you know, like the two per boat. Yeah, you know what? If you got a little 19, 21 footer and you're a captain, yeah, you're going to have two or three people. Some of us have 30 footers. Some of us have five or six guys on the boat. You know, and it's like Zach said, you know, two fish for six guys, this doesn't cut it. No one's going to do that. And then lastly, the gaff. Texas to New York. Why are we the only state that says no gaff? You know, if gaffing cobia was so bad, why isn't the South Atlantic prohibiting gaffing? Why do we got to go above and beyond when every other state says it's not a problem because of one person? It just doesn't make sense. That's all I have. Any questions?
Oh.
All right.
Anybody else have something to add that we haven't heard? From here on in, it's that we haven't heard.
Haven't.
Have not.
My name is Kelly Hoggard. I'm a recreational angler. I've been fishing here all my life. A couple of things I want to point out. First off, the two per boat limit, I don't support that. I support a four per boat limit. My main reason is when I take out three or four guys on the boat, I usually don't keep a fish for myself. And the reason for that is because I fish enough times in the year that I don't need to keep a fish every trip. So when I go out, I'm focused on making sure that there's just enough meat for the guys that I'm taking out. But in the case that, like early in the season, which I'll get to in a second, I want to be able to keep that extra fish to make sure that I've got fish in the freezer or fish to eat early in the season. The second thing I want to point out is I start cobia fishing before June 1st, so I want to see that the season is open earlier and into May, so like May 15th or something like that, because the majority of my fishing is early in the season. I'm more of a chummer, so I don't, you know, July comes around, you do more sight fishing, so a lot more money for me is spent in May at the tackle shops when I'm gearing up. I'm spending more money on chum, more money on eels and stuff like that in May. If you cut that out, you're going to cut out part of my chum in season, which means I'm not going to spend as much money. I'm not going to be able to fish as much. So. But otherwise, I support, you know, the rest of the regulations,
okay.
Size limit, and everything like that.
Great. Thank you. Anybody else have something new to add to the discussion? Last call. Public hearing is now closed. The matter is before the commission for discussion and action. I would like to handle this in a twofold approach. One is for the size and season possession limit and a separate discussion and vote on gaffing. I think these are related but not that directly.
You look to me.
Let's have a discussion. Who wants to start? Mr. Zegra.
I'd like to go ahead and propose a motion and then massage it around that, and like we did last year. It appears to me that here's my motion.
A 40-inch length minimum size. Mm-hmm. One fish per person per day. Two fish per vessel with one over 50. A June 1st date, start date, to September 15th date. Gaffing generally not allowed, but charters and pier are exempt from that. That would be my motion.
So, but you're looking at it. So I got it correctly here. You're motioning for the staff recommendation with an adjustment that the August 31st closure becomes September 15th.
That is correct.
Gaffing allowed at the pier and at charters, with charters.
Yes.
Can I go ahead and second that?
Yeah.
I think you summed it up.
That way gives the charter people a lot more fishing time. It solves all the gapping problems. You know, I'm a recreational charter fisher as well, and I agree with these guys that the guests that come on here are really the dangerous people. And so for them, they do it every day. They know what they're doing. But it's the recreational guy that's in the 18-foot, 17-foot that tries to use a gaff, and he sticks himself with it. That, you know, in addition to killing the fish. But and like one of the gentlemen said here, especially for the charter guys, you know, that extra 2 weeks is going to mean a lot to them financially. So the gentleman just talked about the tackle shop. It gives him an extra 2 weeks, and you know, and from listening to everybody, other than the extra couple fish, I think that's what everybody's been saying. At least that's what I've been hearing.
Mr. Neal.
I'm absolutely opposed to different regulations for charter and recreational. Absolutely. I think that is a terrible precedent. I think it makes an enforcement nightmare. A charter captain is a charter captain when he's on a charter. When he's out there the next day with his buddies, he's recreational. How do you decide what regulations he's going to be fishing under that day? I expect I can gaff a fish as good as anyone here. I'm not a charter captain. And so, I don't think that is something that I don't have a real big preference one way or the other. We'll gaff. I haven't gaffed a cobia in years, but I did get a hook in me from netting. but you know, personally, I like the option. I got gaffs on my boat, so I don't like sector separation. I think that's just a bad thing to go down. Enforcement issues. I want to see the stock assessment. Can you show me that graph for the stock assessment? All right. Yeah, that's what I wanted to see. Is this a spawning stock biomass? Is that what we're looking at?
Yeah, correct.
All right. All right. So we've got data that goes to 2011, and we were at a low point. To the left, we had another low point. And what year was that?
It's like 87.
Okay, and after that, it went up. What? Why?
Well, it could have been a response to the size limit. I'd have to look back to see what they attributed it to.
That's what I'm wondering. The size limit went in effect when, 92, something, 90-something?
No, this is mid-80s it was.
Okay, that's when
they set the first size limit. Okay. Yeah, that was a South Atlantic Council maneuver. I'd have to look and see when we actually did it.
Right. So what the worry is that biomass trend, that stock assessment trend, is continuing the direction it's going.
Yeah, the current ratio is it's 1.29 times that 1-to-1
And the data that we have is none since then, really, other than we do have our citation program, the program we keep wanting to cut, which does, I think, is probably the best self-reporting program we've got on the East Coast since 1965. And since this stock assessment was done, it's shown every year citations have gone up. So from my point of view, I'm not as worried about the stock as you. Well, you have to be. I guess that's your job. And so, except for the second to the last gentleman who wanted to go back to 2014-15 regs, every one of these proposals is more conservationist or more restrictive than what we were fishing with then, whether it's a Carolina regs or staff recommendation. And so a health of stock thing for 1 year, I mean, we're talking about 1 year, I think the fishery can handle that. But on the other hand, I think the fish can handle that, I guess. We have a fish and we have a fishery. The fishery is dependent on healthy fish. We can have healthy fish and not have a healthy fishery because we regulate them out. If we don't want to do that, and I guess that's my point, is that we, from last year's regulations, we still had our charter boat guys were chartered, our tackle shops were still selling stuff, and, you know, I've gone to talk to the tackle shops, and basically they just, their main thing was, don't go lower than two fish, you know, don't close the summer down. And that's really what most of these charter guys, when I've talked to them individually, have told me. So I'm open. Last year I argued very passionately for VMRC, against staff recommendation, to buck the feds. And because I just felt that we were going to be shut out of a fishery unjustly. We were going to have a June 20th closure, let the southern states fish, and then we were going to take the brunt of everything. This is a different animal. No one's trying to shut us down. I could live with any of the regulations that have been proposed. For 1 year, I think we can survive. I think our fishery will survive with the most restrictive, and I think the fish would survive with the most lenient. And so I'm not really interested in this year. And that's not my concern. My concern is next year. And so that's my big issue is where. And that's the question I've been asking many of you staff and people, is what puts us in the best position at ASMFC starting in 2018 and 2019? Now, for some people that says, be as aggressive as you can be, stand your ground, follow Carolina regulations. I guess my overall question is what but I'm summarizing what I've gotten from staff is that we made restrictive regulations last year. Our catch numbers went up, even greater than crazy numbers. We don't believe it, but still the numbers went up. And so to not respond to that at all may hurt us in when we start talking multi-state issues. And so what I'm getting from staff is that showing some response, some tightening is a good thing, but not too much, because we don't want to be in a position where we're so tight that we have nowhere else to go. All right, so I'm looking at you, but I've talked. You know, I'm trying to summarize what I've talked about, half a dozen of you, kind of thing. And so that's I'm more concerned about next year. And so that's, you know, before we start extending regulations and monkeying with the GAF rule again and stuff, that's what I want. Is I want staff's opinion on your best, and I'm assuming is what you recommended, where you think puts us in the best position for 2018 and beyond. So can you? I guess you're going to tell me this.
Well, and I think you summarized the quandary pretty well of you want to restrict, but you also don't want to leave yourself with nothing left to restrict should more be needed in the future. But I guess I would say what caused staff to go towards that two-fish vessel is because, you know, like you said, staff should be worrying about the fish and not just the fishery. And, you know, as I said at the beginning of the presentation, this is a low number. You know, we're close to that biomass at maximum sustainable yield, and if we go lower, we're in trouble. And since then, obviously, we don't have any extra data sources since 2011, but the one thing that we've said and that every single person has said is that there are more people fishing for cobia and people are better at fishing for cobia. And so while we don't have any specific quantitative analysis that would say cobia are definitely in trouble, the reason for caution and conservation is coming from the fact that we know we have a growing fishery in the last 5 years. And 5-6 years ago, there was reason to be, at least have your eye on it. So two fish vessel limit's very low because there's only one way, there's only one possible option to go with the vessel limit if you get even more restrictive than that. And one fish is tough. I mean, that's obviously tough for charter, and that can be even tough for private. So, but at the end of the day, it was the need to be restrictive combined with, you know, concern for, as you said, the future of the stock.
Thank you for that. And I guess in a little bit in opposition to what your procedure was, that, you know, I find staff recommendation to be somewhat of a compromise. They're showing a closing of May, which is really about a two-week closure, to show that, hey, we've made a response to this 900-something thousand pounds that MRIP has shown us. You gained a day in August because the calendar says August has 31 days. And they've done away with the gaff thing, which seemed to be making a lot of people happy, getting rid of that gaff regulation to make some people unhappy. So, you know, I'm more in line with staff recommendation this year, which is against what I said last year. But you're not trying to shut me down this year. That is the difference. And, you know, I think we can survive 1 year with anything. And so it's what are we going to be facing next year? And so I'm relying on what I'm hearing is where the people who are going to be dealing with Maryland and North Carolina and South Carolina and Georgia and Florida and ASMS in Jersey next year, what they're telling me, what they think we should do. And it's a regulation that I think that we would have been tickled to death with last year if we'd passed this exact same, just kind of what we did. You know, it's minus in the gaff, or you're getting a day at the end, you're losing 2 weeks at the beginning. I don't want sector separation. I don't want to have me trying to, you know, tell me I can't gaff, but he can gaff because he's got, but you can gaff because you've got your captain's license. You know, I can't kind of thing. And I just think that's an enforcement problem. I guess that's my through my comments, but you do have a motion and a second already.
Well, I think the motion in the second was basically a straw man to get us in the discussion and a start point for a discussion. I'll throw my two cents, which are elements from what you've both said, with kind of a little bit of a twist. I am concerned about this year's regulations, not just to get through this year, but I'm also concerned about setting the stage. And setting the stage for the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, if they go with state-by-state allocations, the brass ring for me is making sure that Virginia gets a large quota. That sets us for 20 years, absent some sort of catastrophic event within the system, within the fishery. So I think that we need to be cognizant of the charter fishing industry's needs at the same time that we have to present that we are responsible managers of this fishery. We need to be in a position that we see the problems as identified, we see the fishing effort that has increased, we understand that we are keepers of this resource, and as a result, we stand to be in a better position and viewed more favorably when Rob O'Reilly and I and others are arguing for a large, if not the largest, quota on the East Coast. That's the gold ring to me. So to that end, I think that your motion, Mr. Zetron, is close, but there's two things that I would change, and you might be surprised to hear them. I'd be willing to go to a 3 fish per day vessel limit. I would be willing to do that. I'd be willing to do that because an opening date of June 1st protects spawning stock pre-spawn, and the theory that as they're coming here to spawn, And the more of them that survive the spawn, the better it is for the entire stock. So to that end, I'd be willing to go to 3 fish per vessel and keep the rest of this started June 1st and closed August 31st. And I am with Mr. Neal here. I'd be happier if gaffing was allowed just on piers. I think that's a conservation issue, that we duck a problem with people that are gaffing if they're close, in the hopes that maybe it's right, and if it's not, no harm, no foul, you'll just catch another one. Mr. Zedner.
Part of my motion here is from June 1st, which will give us the spawning for the May. But, you know, I listen to these guys out here, and you know, I asked one of the gentlemen, I think a guy in a white shirt there with his hands on his head, would you rather have 4 fish in a shorter season or 2 fish in a longer season? And he said, I'd rather have a longer season. And I think, you know, last year we heard it from the charter captains, we heard it from the tackle shops, we heard they want a season so they can sell and book and stuff like that. So I think that, you know, we're accomplishing that by starting in June, because we're saving that breeding stock, and then go to September the 15th, which let them have a couple more weeks here to get more charters, more tackle, more bait, more whatever. And so we're kind of responding to the needs of the watermen there. So what I'm trying to say is we're trying to balance, give them a little longer season, but don't give them their 3 fish or 4 fish. Just give them their 2 fish, because I think most of them are happy with that. They want to be able to get out there. And I'd be willing to delete the gapping out of my motion. And we'll just see how it works. But we've got to understand where that came from. And that came from the fact that many of the recreational people were gapping close to size fish, and they were dead. And so I would be willing to withdraw out of my motion the sentence that says gapping not allowed generally, and charters and piers are exempt. So I would move to amend my motion to take that out, but leave the rest of it as it is.
So your amended motion would be, could you put up the staff recommendation?
Sure.
Staff recommendation with the exception of a September 15th closure date and a continued prohibition on gaffing. No? Did I misunderstand that?
No. I'm sorry, I didn't listen to you. I was looking at it. I was reading what's
staff
up there.
Doesn't listen to me either. That's all right.
Say again, please.
So I might have misunderstood this, but I thought that you were talking that amending your motion here, so it's the staff recommendation with a season closure of September 15th and gaffing is continued to be prohibited?
No. I'm taking gaffing out.
He's allowing gaffing.
I'm allowing gaffing.
I'm okay with that. Either prohibit it or let it for everybody.
Mr. Minor will second that.
Okay.
So
that's exactly the staff recommendation, except a later closure date.
Yep.
Well, just a point for the record, when we put this recommendation up, the implication was that staff simply is not providing a recommendation for or against gaffing.
Right.
So.
If we enact this, we ignore gaffing.
But
others have some thoughts on all that. I'm sorry,
Mike. I was just going to say that as they stand now, the regulations prohibit gaffing across the board, but we didn't mean to imply that we were actively encouraging that it stay prohibited. We just wanted to say we don't have any recommendations at this time.
It's not exactly the same.
Mr. Erskine.
So I appreciate everybody making comments. Obviously, by a full room and diverse number of comments, you all are passionate about the issue, and I think that speaks volumes for the fish and the fishery. Having said that, I just want to point out that there's a lot of agreement in this room. Minimum size, 1 fish per person, clearly mandatory reporting was something that I heard loud and clear that needs to take place in this fishery. And I'll say it again, it's probably the most important thing that you all can have in this thing. However, to take one season of mandatory reporting and project that down the road is invalid. You need several years of mandatory reporting in order to have something that's statistically valid to show that you do have a lot of fish in this fishery. You know, I'm inclined to agree that this should be a longer season, that August 31st eliminates, I would imagine, one of the more important weekends being Labor Day weekend to get out there and do some sport fishing and take people out on charters. So I agree with September 15th, and I certainly agree with starting June 1st. So it's really where I'm coming down to is the disagreement seems to be between, aside from the gaffing issue, the two fish per vessel or the four fish per vessel is where it seems to come down to. Those are my only comments. Thank you.
Mr. Ballard.
I'm sort of feeling in line with Mr. Erskine's comments. If I had to vote right now, I'd probably be leaning towards a September 15th date. When I look at the fish per vessel, three fish versus two fish, I would note, granted the statistical models, who knows how accurate they are, but I do note the delta on the projections is about 20,000 pounds, which is a decent amount, but not entirely a large number. If three fish can make a big difference for some of the charter guys, that wouldn't be too terrible for me. On the flip side, gaffing, I kind of come down on it. It seemed to me it was the lowest thing on everybody's priority. And if it's something we can use to show that we are taking action to help us out with any future issues, I get the safety issues. It's unfortunate, but I do think that's something that everybody doesn't seem to care that much about, that we could use as kind of a feather in our hat when we go to MFC in the future. So I'm kind of weighing in on the 40 inches, one fish per person, three fish per vessel, season closure date of September 15th, no gaffing.
I'll note that we don't gaff red drum at that size. We don't gaff stripers at that size. That's, I don't know why cobia is different. I really just don't understand why cobia is different than those other large species that gaffing is prohibited on.
I haven't gaffed a cobia in years. There is one I wish I had, and it won't big.
You told me that story.
Yes, and it was painful. But, you know, I can see it. And how position what they say. Usually the cobia I gaff, they're the ones that go nuts, and the ones I net don't. So we net them and tag them and take DNA samples, and you know, they behave themselves. You stick them, they don't like that. But like I said, it's not a big issue for me either way. I can do either one. And for some people out there, it does seem to be a big deal, one way or the other.
Mr. Erskine, did I see your hand up?
Well, I guess I was looking back at some of the information, but can you further explain, Ryan, the three and four fish? I thought you had a table up there that was three or four.
Sure. Well, I'll just go into some of these. So yeah, as you can see, this table is labeled three or four fish vessels.
Yeah, that's what I got here.
So as I said, the general gist of our projection method is looking at MRIP data from the past and saying, if we had the new regulations in place back then, which fish would have been saved from those intercepted cobia? And so when you look at 2014, 2015, 2016, even back to 2013, almost every trip is only one or two fish on the boat. So you can't, when you go back to those data points and say, okay, if instead of a four or six or no vessel limit at all, we instead had a two fish vessel limit, how many fish would have been saved? You're looking at trips of one and two fish, so no fish would have been saved. And so the problem is, I guess in reality, we had a number of trips where there were three fish to the boat, but there were no trips where there were four fish to the boat. So that the number of fish that would have been saved is the same number of fish, whether you have that threshold drawn at three or at four.
Okay.
So
that's just a function of the report.
It's an artifact of the
data.
Yeah,
right.
We know that in the past, people did catch more than fish on a boat. We know that our charter captains are fully capable of doing it. Experienced private recreational anglers, if they took enough people out, could do it. So it really just was unfortunate. And that's, you know, a larger issue that the MRIP survey, for some reason in Virginia, has never really captured the charter boat mode. I mean, you can look at years where there's only approximately 350 pounds of cobia attributed to the charter boat in an entire season. And so one of the biggest benefits of if we get mandatory reporting, get good compliance, we're going to have very good charter boat information that we simply haven't had. You know, you look at South Carolina's logbook program that they've had since the late 90s. That data set was used in the cobia stock assessment. And so there's hope that with good, consistent participation, like you said, over the years, that we'll have true representation in the data from our charter industry.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Neal.
Chad basically kind of echoed the conversation I had with John about the gaffing thing. But then I asked you last night why staff did not make a recommendation. And can you tell us that?
Sure, sure. So one thing that staff has always attempted to do is provide recommendations that are based in science. Even if there's questions about the science, everything that we try to put forward as a recommendation to the commission is backed up by numbers or backed up by policy or history or general biology of a fish. And so the reason that, you know, I made a point to say we don't have a recommendation one way or the other is that we don't have any science on the biological effect of gaffing. Obviously, you can use common sense and say if you gaff a fish in the stomach or in the back and then throw it back, its chances of survival are low. But we also know that cobia are pretty tough fish, even compared to some of the other fish in the bay. So it would be difficult for us to even fudge or make up a number of how many fish that are gaffed and thrown back or that escape the gaff are going to live or are going to die. And so that any information, one way or the other, to say that gaff is really damaging or that a gaff, you know, puncture is not that damaging, there's really no concrete information that staff would be able to stand on and say, yes, we think that gaffing should be prohibited because they all die, or no, gaffing can be allowed because most of the cobia survive. You know, you can look at hooking mortality, and there's tons of studies out there on hooking mortality. If you hook a fish in the jaw, in the gut, or in the back, you know, somewhere foul hooked, there's plenty of studies and literature that says 8% of those fish die, 20% of those fish die. So without that analogous information for the effect of gaffing, it's tough for staff to try and put forth a defensible position.
Got a question.
Mr. Zetron.
If from this mandatory reporting it becomes aware that there are abundance of stock, can the commission later increase from 2 per boat to 3 per boat or 4 per boat at a later time?
I think it would be tough to answer that question in a vacuum, especially in a couple of years. We may be at ASMFC and we may have restrictions already in place. You know, we can't go above this or that. So the stock assessment is probably going to be the place where, number one, we would get the answer about the abundance of the stock as a coastal unit. And number two, if there's a place for our mandatory reporting information to be used, it would be within the stock assessment, not as a standalone tool to say, yes, there are a lot of fish, or no, there are not a lot of fish. It would be one part to the overall stock assessment.
Okay, thank you.
More comments, more discussion. Would you put the staff recommendation back? I will back us back up to where we are. As I recall, the motion on the table is by Mr. Zetron. This is second by Mr. Minor, which is the staff recommendation adjusted to have a September 15th closure date with gaffing permitted, allowed. And that's where we're at with the motion on the table. So if somebody has a different path forward, now's the time for a substitute motion, or we can just move ahead here. So is there any other discussion? Mr. Frantz.
I'll have to ask maybe Mr. Neal, but if you're fishing for cobia in the bay in, say, June or July, what's the chance of you catching other species at that time, like black drum or striped bass?
If you're cobia fishing, it depends on how you're fishing. If you're sight fishing, you can catch whatever you throw at.
Chum.
But if you're anchored up chumming and you're fishing for cobia, your best chance of a bycatch is going to probably be red drum. Sharks is what your best catch is going to be. You're getting the damn sharks. Yeah, it's going to be plenty of that stuff. But it's talking about good fish. Black drum is not a real.
No. And my concern is the same that Commissioner had. You know, if you catch multiple species and you can't gaff those species, and then having a gaff on the boat for just cobia.
Everybody has nets in the boat.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's, and so I don't know that we need to have a regulation that you have to have a landing net, because I don't know a boat that does that. We have size regulations. We always have had size regulations. And so every boat out there has had to net cobia that are, like, too small to keep. So that's, I guess it's a good point to bring up, and that's not a real issue.
Mr. Ballard.
I guess I'll offer a substitute motion of exactly what's on the board, but changing to 3 fish per vessel per day limit, changing the season closure date to September 15th, zero gaffing allowed. And my logic, I think, comes down to it is looking at both sides. And I don't trust the science. Someone before I came on this commission once told me that my job being on this board was to do the sniff test, and that there were people a lot smarter than me analyzing the data, coming up with the statistics, but my job was to see whether it smells right or not. And something doesn't smell right to me, and I have trouble kind of hearing businesses closing down 32% year over year on data that just doesn't smell right. And I think with 1 year of slightly relaxed restrictions, we're not going to hurt the stock that much. I think ASMFC is well aware of the situations and the work Virginia's been doing, and I have great confidence in our VMRC commission to present our case to ASMFC when the time comes.
I'll second that.
He's just changed your
discussion.
He's just changed yours from 2 fish to 3 fish, but he's taken away your gaffing. He said no gaffing. So he's given them an extra fish, but kept the gaff away. And I don't know what's going on.
So it's a substitute motion by Mr. Ballard, seconded by Mr. France. And the substitute motion has precedent. So it would be season opening of June 1st, season closure of September 15th, 40-inch minimum size limit, 1 fish over 50 inches, 3 fish per vessel maximum, gaffing prohibited.
That's how I understood it. Yeah, but is that,
Mr. Zedra?
But you did say 1 fish per person.
It's 1 fish per person.
And then the captain and the mate don't count.
No, they wouldn't count because it's 3 fish per vessel.
Okay, that's right. Okay.
No. And 40 inches minimum size, and one of those 3 fish could be over 50 inches. June 1st opening, September 15th closure.
Just
yes, right.
A point of order. If I think the commission needs to be clear whether it wants to explicitly say in the motion if captain and mate count towards the number of people that would lead to the vessel limit. Because if you just say 3 fish per vessel per day, a charter captain could take out his mate and one customer and still keep 3 fish. If we wanted the captain and mate not to count, I think we would need to put that in regulation and say so.
Maker of the motion.
Maker of the motion.
I had originally intended on not clarifying captain and mate, but I think that makes sense that we are doing this to protect the charter business driven by the customers. I'm in agreement with the logic, and yeah, I'll amend the motion to 3 fish per vessel per day, and however you think we should word that, I guess 1 fish per person. How do we even do that, though? Because then you got the recreational fishermen. that how do you count the captain of the boat in the recreational fishery? If you have a clever way of wording that, I'm fine with that, but it sounds messy.
Yeah, the way we had kind of conceptualized it last night at the meeting was on a for-hire trip.
Again, then we're splitting hairs between two different fisher groups. I'll leave it to where the motion stands to not delineate between captain and mate.
All right, let me restate the motion here, make sure that we're all on the same page before we move forward, make sure we all know exactly what we're voting on here. So, season opens June 1st. Season closes September 15th. 40-inch minimum size limit. One fish can be over 50 inches. One fish per person possession limit per day. Three fish vessel limit. Gaffing prohibited. We have some further discussion on the substitute motion that has precedence. I'll call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any noes? The chair votes aye as well, and the motion passes unanimously.
Oh boy.
All right. Hey, give them a round of applause. Not me, them. Is there anything else for the good of the order? Seeing none, the meeting is adjourned.